The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Dr. Scott Youngkin for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Health Issues for the next half hour. I'll be reading articles from the Mayo Clinic Health Letter. And the first article I'm going to read is a special report about breast cancer. This is from February 2025. And it's titled, Breast Cancer, Five Ways Breast Care Has Become More Personalized. Screening and treatment advances have dramatically changed the outlook for people with breast cancer. Between 1975 and 2019, breast cancer death rates have dropped 58%. Even with late-stage breast cancer that has spread to other parts of the body, people are living longer than ever before. These striking improvements stem partly from cancer care that tailors prevention. Screening and treatment to each person's unique needs. For example, depending on your family cancer history, you might undergo more frequent screening at an earlier age, using the most sensitive breast imaging methods. In addition, should you develop breast cancer, the right treatments for you will depend on your preferences and goals, along with the cancer's size, location, and other characteristics. We are trying to simultaneously figure out who needs more treatment and who needs less, says Karthik Giridhar, MD, a medical oncologist at Mayo Clinic. This right-sizing of treatment leads to individual decision-making regarding the right approach for each person based on their specific breast cancer. Breast cancer is the most common non-skin cancer diagnosed in women in the United States. It starts with changes to the DNA inside breast cells. DNA holds the instructions that tell cells what to do. In healthy cells, the DNA says to grow and multiply at a set rate, as well as to die at an appropriate time. But in cancer cells, DNA gives different instructions, telling those cells to multiply rapidly and persist beyond any pre-programmed death. This leads to a buildup of excess cells called a mass or tumor. As cancerous masses grow, they can invade and damage healthy tissue. In addition, cancer cells can break away and spread or metastasize to other parts of the body. Your risk of developing breast cancer can affect your screening frequency, screening methods, and even some lifestyle decisions. For example, if your lifetime risk of developing breast cancer is 20% or higher, your healthcare team may recommend more frequent screening, says Dr. Jessica Fraker, a Mayo Clinic internal medicine physician specializing in breast medicine. Your care team will use a risk assessment to calculate your likelihood of developing breast cancer based on several factors, including your age. As you get older, your immune system loses some of its ability to fight against cancer cells, allowing them to multiply more easily. And the longer you live, the more exposure you have to environmental factors that can damage DNA. Your sex. Men are much less likely to develop breast cancer. The cancer's frequency in women is due in part to their higher levels of the hormone estrogen and progesterone. Radiation exposure. If you had radiation treatments to your chest as a child or young adult, your risk of breast cancer is higher. Family history. If your parents, sibling, or child had breast cancer, your risk of breast cancer may be increased. Your risk could be even higher if a family member developed breast cancer at a young age, or if you have multiple family members with breast cancer. Inherited genes. Certain gene variants are associated with an increased risk of developing breast cancer. For example, if you're a carrier of the high-risk BRCA1 or BRCA2 gene variant, your risk of developing breast cancer is higher. Breast conditions like lobular carcinoma in situ, called LCIS, And atypical hyperplasia of the breast can raise your risk of developing breast cancer. Having high-density breast tissue, as seen on a mammogram, also raises your risk. If you've already had cancer in one breast, you have an increased risk of developing cancer on the same side or in the other breast. Menstrual and reproductive history. The longer you have periods, the longer your breasts are exposed to estrogen and progesterone. For this reason, your breast cancer risk is higher if you started getting periods before age 12 or stopped after age 55. Never giving birth or having your first child after age 30 also increases your risk. Based on these and several other factors, healthcare professionals may personalize breast care in five important ways. The first is personalized breast imaging. You've likely heard of recommendations to start mammograms at around age 40 and continue them until age 75. But depending on your personal breast cancer risk, breast density, and overall health, you may benefit from additional screening, says Dr. Fraker. It's definitely not one size fits all when it comes to screening, says Dr. Fraker. Make sure your care team knows your family and personal history of breast cancer. That information can prompt conversations about the best kind of screening for you. Talk about your goals, what you hope to achieve with screening, and any downsides you hope to avoid. Potential screening methods include mammograms. This is the foundational screening test of breast cancer. A mammogram uses low-dose X-ray to see inside your breasts. Newer 3D mammograms, also called breast tomosynthesis, give radiologists more detailed views of breast tissue. Like a traditional 2D mammogram, this technology uses X-rays. Unlike a 2D mammogram, breast tomosynthesis collects multiple images of the breast from several angles. Compared with 2D mammography, 3D technology usually makes it easier to spot concerns in dense breast tissue. It also reduces the likelihood that the radiologist will call you back for additional imaging for something that is ultimately not concerning. Breast MRI. MRI uses a magnetic field and radio waves to scan your breasts and create detailed images of them. Before a breast MRI, you usually receive an injection of a gadolinium-based contrast dye into a vein. The dye helps improve the clarity of the images. MRI is a very sensitive test that can pick up even tiny cancers that are hiding in hard-to-see places like the armpit or the back of the breast, especially for women with dense breast tissue, says Dr. Fraker. However, MRI also is more likely to lead to unnecessary further testing, which can cause stress, anxiety, and additional costs. Molecular breast imaging. Developed by Mayo Clinic experts, this supplemental imaging technique uses a specially designed gamma camera that records the activity in the breast of an injected radioactive tracer as it circulates in the body. Healthy tissues and cancerous tissues react differently to the tracer, which is then seen in the images. Several studies show that MBI consistently finds about 3 times more breast cancers in women who have dense breast tissue than does mammography, and more often finds early invasive breast cancers than do other supplemental screening methods. But this test is not widely available. Then there's contrast-enhanced digital mammogram. For this test, a healthcare professional will use an iodine-based contrast agent to highlight possible areas of concern, followed by a mammogram. Then there's breast ultrasound, Ultrasound uses sound waves to make pictures of structures inside the body. It's often used in conjunction with other tests to give your healthcare team more information about a suspicious mammogram or exam finding. An ultrasound might show whether a lump is a solid mass or a fluid-filled cyst. Each of these tests has different pros and cons. Talk with your care team about which one will work best for you. In general, your breast cancer risk and personal preferences will help inform the right breast cancer screening plan. Screening plans may vary if you have dense breasts. Compared with 2D mammography, 3D mammography can make it easier for radiologists to detect cancer in people with dense breasts. 3D mammography is now often the standard approach for all screening mammograms. In addition, your care team may recommend that you have further screening. Or are you at higher risk of developing breast cancer? Your team may recommend that you start screening before age 40. Have more frequent screening and consider additional contrast-enhanced screening like a breast MRI or contrast-enhanced mammogram. Are you older than 75? The age at which you stop screening depends on your health and personal preferences. If you're in your 70s or 80s, are healthy, and would like to know if breast cancer is there, you might continue with screening. In contrast, if your health declines and you're more concerned about other medical issues, you might choose to forego screening. Work closely with your care team to weigh your individual risks and benefits. Then there's personalized lifestyle steps. The following lifestyle changes can help you reduce your risk of developing breast cancer. How you put these recommendations into practice will depend on your health, ability, and current lifestyle practices. First of all, you should exercise regularly. Regular physical activity is probably the closest thing to an elixir of life that humans will ever encounter. Being active doesn't just help with weight loss and maintenance, it also reduces health risks, including the risk of breast cancer. After analyzing the health records of over 174,000 women between 2006 and 2014, researchers determined that the most physically active women were less likely to be diagnosed with breast cancer during the 5.7-year study than were the women who were the least physically active. Experts currently recommend that you exercise at a moderate intensity for 150 to 300 minutes a week, or vigorously for 75 to 150 minutes a week, along with doing twice-weekly strength training sessions. If you can't reach those goals, anything is better than nothing, says Dr. Fraker. In fact, if you haven't been active for a long time, it's better to start slowly and increase your effort and duration over time. Walking for just 10 minutes a day can help reduce your cancer risk if you previously were doing no walking at all. Choose activities you enjoy. The best exercise is the kind you're willing to continue over the long term. And then you should eat a plant-based diet. Fruits, vegetables, and other plant-based foods contain nutrients, fiber, healthy fats, and antioxidants that protect cells from damage. In addition to lowering your cancer risk, these foods may reduce your risk of other serious conditions, like heart disease. Aim to eat a colorful variety of plant-based foods, including fruits, vegetables, whole grains, and legumes. In addition, cook with healthy fats, like olive oil, and opt for nuts, seeds, and avocados, over red meat and other foods high in saturated fat. Try to focus more on progress than on perfection. If you're currently eating few or no plant-based foods, start with one daily serving. Once that becomes routine, try for two and improve from there. Similarly, focus on what you can afford and are willing to do. For example, try boosting your consumption of beans and other convenient, inexpensive plant foods. You should also maintain a healthy weight. Body fat releases estrogen-like molecules that are thought to increase the risk of hormone receptor positive breast cancer. Excess body fat can raise insulin and inflammation levels, which may increase your risk. To assess your body fat, measure your waist circumference. A waist circumference that exceeds 35 inches in women and 40 inches in men is associated with increased cancer risk. According to a recent analysis of the health outcomes of over 180,000 women age 50 and older, losing as few as 4.5 pounds and keeping them off can significantly reduce breast cancer risk. This is true even in people with obesity. Drinking even small to moderate amounts of alcohol can increase your breast cancer risk. If you've been diagnosed with breast cancer, avoiding alcohol may reduce your risk of a cancer recurrence. The risks of drinking alcohol may be particularly high for breast cancer survivors who are postmenopausal, who have obesity, or who have estrogen receptor positive cancers. It's healthiest and safest to drink no alcohol. If abstinence is not what you choose, keep your intake to no more than 3 drinks a week and no more than 1 a day. One drink is 12 ounces of beer, 5 ounces of wine, or 1.5 fluid ounces of hard liquor or distilled spirits. In addition to raising your risk of developing breast cancer, smoking and vaping also reduce your ability to survive a breast cancer diagnosis. Quitting these habits substantially improves your odds of living longer. Then there are certain personalized preventive treatments. If you have a high risk of developing breast cancer, your healthcare team may recommend risk-reducing medications. There's two types of these. The first is estrogen-blocking medicines. Selective estrogen receptor modulators, or SERMs, like tamoxifen, bind to the estrogen receptors on cells, stopping the hormone from fueling cell growth. Side effects may include hot flashes, fatigue, nausea, and vaginal dryness. Less common side effects include an increased risk of blood clots, stroke, and postmenopausal uterine cancer. Then there's estrogen-lowering medications. These are aromatase inhibitors, which decrease estrogen production. Side effects include hot flashes, vaginal dryness, joint pain, and bone loss leading to osteoporosis. Aromatase inhibitors are not associated with a higher risk of blood clots, stroke, or uterine cancer. Some people assume that these drugs only work for premenopausal women whose ovaries are still producing estrogen. However, estrogen-fueled breast cancer is more common after menopause, says Dr. Fraker. As you age, your risk of getting breast cancer rises. Age 63 is the median age of diagnosis. The body still produces small amounts of estrogen long after menopause, says Dr. Fraker. Fat cells can produce some estrogen, she says. It's the cellular damage that occurs with getting older that increases your breast cancer risk. Even small amounts of estrogen can feed into those changes and help breast cancer grow. If you're at a high risk of breast cancer, talk with your care team about risk-reducing medicines. Together, based on your health, family history, age, and medical history, you can decide whether these drugs are right for you. Then there's personalized cancer treatment. Using a tissue sample from a breast biopsy, along with information from other tests, a medical team can gain a clearer picture of how a specific cancer will respond to chemotherapy and other cancer-fighting medications. Some breast cancer cells are sensitive to the body's naturally occurring estrogen and progesterone. If you have a hormone receptor positive or HR positive cancer, you may benefit from endocrine therapy, which blocks estrogen's effects on the cancer cells, helping to decrease their growth. Endocrine therapy Options include medicines that block hormones from attaching to cancer cells, medicines that stop the body from making estrogen after menopause, and surgery or medicines to stop the ovaries from making hormones. Endocrine therapy is often used after cancer-removing surgery. It's usually recommended for 5 to 10 years because it reduces the risk of cancer recurrence in the breast and elsewhere. But for some people, the side effects of endocrine therapy make it hard or impossible to take the medication for years. If you're experiencing significant side effects, talk with your cancer care team. Many symptoms can be managed by adjusting or changing the medication or adding supportive therapies. About 1 in every 5 breast cancers contain cells with extra copies of the gene that makes the human epidermal growth factor 2 receptor, or HER2 protein. In healthy cells, HER2 proteins are far apart. So when a cell needs to divide, 2 of these proteins join in a regulated, controlled way, signaling the cell to replicate. When cells have higher than typical amounts of HER2 protein, they can divide in an uncontrolled manner. HER2-positive cancers can spread quickly. Historically, overexpression of HER2 proteins was associated with increased risk of breast cancer recurrence and a worse outlook. However, treatments that specifically target HER2 are so effective, the prognosis for HER2-positive breast cancer is now good. HER2-targeted therapies include monoclonal antibodies, drugs like Herceptin, Perjeta, and Margenza, attached to HER2 receptors on cancer cells, stopping them from receiving signals. Monoclonal antibodies also engage the body's immune system to destroy cancer cells. Then there's tyrosine kinase inhibitors, drugs like Tykerb, Nerlynx, and Tukysa block the protein tyrosine kinase, which can help stop cancer growth. Finally, there are antibody-drug conjugates, and these include Cadcycla, Enhertu, and these drugs neutralize HER2-positive cancer cells. According to Dr. Giridhar, a cancer's unique biology and stage can help healthcare professionals tailor the right sequence of surgery, systemic therapy, or radiation. If your cancer cells lack receptors for hormones and HER2, sometimes referred to as triple negative breast cancer, your care team may recommend chemotherapy before surgery. In addition to chemotherapy, immunotherapy such as Keytruda may be recommended to stimulate your immune system to recognize and attack cancer cells. By tailoring these medications to your cancer's unique biology, healthcare professionals can sometimes clear all cancer cells, even before surgery has been done to remove cancerous masses from the breast and ensure that the lymph nodes are clear. This is known as pathological complete response, meaning there are no signs of cancer in the tissue samples removed during surgery. If someone receives a PCR, we know that outcomes are excellent and the chance of cancer recurrence is really low. Says Dr. Giridhar, if there is residual disease at the time of surgery, your team may recommend different or additional therapy to further reduce the risk of recurrence. If breast cancer hasn't spread beyond the breast and lymph nodes, your cancer care team will generally recommend surgical cancer removal. In recent years, the surgical options have expanded. Most people with breast cancer still need appropriate surgery, says Judy Bowie, a breast surgical oncologist who has conducted several clinical trials related to breast cancer treatment and care. But often we can personalize our approach, perform less aggressive surgery, and still have a good outcome. And there's several options. The first is breast-conserving surgery. Also called lumpectomy, this typically outpatient procedure involves removing the tumor and a rim of surrounding tissue known as a margin. Treatment advances have made this option available to more people with breast cancer than ever before. By pre-treating breast tissue with cancer-killing medications, your care team can shrink the tumor, making the subsequent surgery less extensive. This process allows someone who might have initially required a mastectomy to become a candidate for breast conservation. Says Dr. Bowie, it's been a phenomenal advance. When the cancer has an excellent response to drugs, there's sometimes no evidence of disease at surgery. In addition, advanced oncoplastic techniques often allow surgeons to remove tumors without changing the shape of the breast or leaving a divot. At Mayo Clinic, surgeons work closely with pathologists in the operating suite. After a surgeon removes breast tissue, the pathologist immediately studies it. If the pathologist determines that cancer is present at the edges of the removed tissue, the surgeon then takes out more tissue from that area to ensure clean margins. Not only does this spare healthy tissue, but it also dramatically reduces the need for follow-up surgery. Well, it looks like we've run out of time for today's episode of Health Issues. Be sure to listen next time. We hope you enjoyed it. I'm Dr. Scott Youngkin, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Health Issues is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service. Thank you.